Welcome to GIZ Sport for Development podcast series, raising awareness on the 16 days of activism against GBV. This is your host, Mariam Ibrahim, with the second of four episodes. If you've already listened to the first one, welcome back. If this is your first one tuning in, well, welcome to the family. Today, we're exploring the role of sport in tackling GBV with Yanni and Rebecca from Tackle Africa. How about we start with a quick round of introduction?
Hi, everybody. My name's Yanni. I'm Director of Operations for Tackle Africa, and I'm responsible for the work that we do all across sub-Saharan Africa.
Hi, all. I'm Rebecca, Program Manager for Tackle Africa in Ivory Coast, and I'm in charge of what happens on the field in Côte d'Ivoire.
Thank you, Yanni and Rebecca, for taking the time to be with us here today. And I think it's very interesting, and we're really looking forward to diving into the sport for development aspect of tackling GBV. I think the first question that would pop into my mind would be really, what is the link between sport and social issues in general, really? And then how does that eventually trickle into tackling serious issues like GBV and FGMC?
I think it's a really good question, Mariam. When it comes to sport for social change, this is the field that Tackle Africa has been working in for many years. And the main way that we engage young people is by using sport, and in our case, it's particularly football, as the hook. So it's something that motivates young people to be involved. It's something that motivates communities. And it's a way of addressing certain issues that might be quite difficult to raise and might be quite taboo in some places. But it allows us that entry point to start a conversation, to create a safe space for people to talk and to create role models. So if we can create role models in the community, we've got a way of talking to young people, because predominantly Tackle Africa does sexual reproductive health and rights. And we've got a way of talking to young people at a level that they want to be engaged in. And so for us, that is the real strength of the methodology of using sport for social change.
You were talking about a role model effect, really building that community support. So can you give us like a sneak peek, maybe, Rebecca, what do the trainings look like on the ground?
We use football, as you know. We deliver training courses for about 20 coaches, and then they are the actors in the community. So they are the role models. They are going to deliver sessions, football sessions, to kids. That's where magic happens, as everybody here loves football. So yeah, it's nice seeing the coaches deliver, as you know, the kids like to be there. And in each session, those kids get the chance to speak up and to talk about subjects they wouldn't talk about if football wouldn't be there, because it's delicate subjects. The environment we put them in helps them talk about things they are still taboo in our communities.
Do you have mixed sessions? So women, girls, boys, and men, or are you separating female and male participants in your sessions?
We have both together. We're trying to break that stigma that, for example, in our case, that girls can't play football. So we do have girls and boys in some teams. We do have only girl teams sometimes, but we're trying to give confidence and empower those girls and women.
So maybe, I think, Yanni, also from your regional perspective here, do you think the argument of, oh no, this is a female issue, we should work on it with a female-only safe space first and really work through the stuff, is valid? Or do you think it really has the weight people think it does?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't feel that there's a one-size-fits-all solution. So particularly for us at Tackle Africa, we understand that if we're going to be involved in gender transformative programming and we're going to be working on societal or contextual issues, you can't just have one thing that works. And we understand that Tackle Africa's role is not an isolated thing that's going to solve the issues and the underlying causes of gender inequality in sub-Saharan Africa. There is absolutely a very strong argument that you need to have safe spaces, you need to have women-led programs, and you need to have environments where only women are coming together and they're leading the process, they're designing the process, they're building it from scratch in collaboration and delivering it and then taking it through to a results phase. we are 100% behind that. And when you look at that from a sexual health lens, which is what we do, there are times when we absolutely need to make sure that we are upskilling our partner organizations and their female members to become strong, positive female role models that are working in girls' teams and girls' community groups, so that those young women and girls are coming along, they are looking up to somebody that they can see in a positive light, which they may not have a lot of in their life. And then they are able, comfortable, and safe to discuss things that they wouldn't be if it was a male coach, or if there were boys in the team, or if there are men standing around watching. So there is absolutely a space for it, and it is hugely important. But Rebecca's touched on the other side of this coin, which is if we're going to have an impact on gender inequality, we can't only do the female empowerment part of this, but we also need to educate our boys and our young men and our community members, because without the ability to then take action on whatever it is you're working on, so for us as an organization, female genital mutilation and cutting is one of the main GBV issues that we work on. It doesn't mean anything unless people are then able to take action. Both sides of those things work, and we invest a lot of our time with our local partners trying to engage in consortia to make sure that we're working with multiple stakeholders and we're choosing the right intervention for the right group so we can have maximum impact.
This is a very strong way to end that answer. What I really appreciate about Tackle Africa is really this network of organizations, the way you bring people together, the way your experts are really all over, and then how do you manage all this knowledge and all these different experiences to eventually have a manual about, hey, like, this has worked for us, so how do you bring all of that together?
From our point of view, I go back to what I said about us understanding our role when we're trying to change these really deep-seated issues and these hugely important issues when it comes to sexual health or gender-based violence. We are specialists. We've been doing this for a very long time in sport for development, football for development. We understand the context across sub-Saharan Africa because we've been there for so long and we've worked with so many partner organizations. But the truth of it is even though we're experts on the methodology of sport for social change, on things like safeguarding and monitoring and evaluation, all of these important development things, we cannot do the work we do without our local partners. We cannot do it without the community stakeholders, because they're the ones that are really going to bring the local on the ground knowledge. And most importantly, they are the element of sustainability. So if you're empowering these organizations, if you're working in partnership, and if you're providing a methodology to them, they're then able to continue that. They're able to put that down. They legitimize it in the community. They can communicate with everybody. You can engage with the people you need to engage to make sure that you're having the maximum impact and that you're reaching the people you really need to reach. So it's not just the easy to reach, you know, the low hanging fruit. We need to be reaching those that are most at risk and those who most need the intervention.
The two buzzwords for me here are sustainability. The goal is really that the programming continues even when you're not there anymore, which is also very important to us. And then maybe you also mentioned safeguarding, which is also a big one for us. Can you give us a few words on what you understand under safeguarding?
Organizationally for us, safeguarding kind of follows two tracks. There is safeguarding as we understand, which is the prevention of harm and the creating of a safe space for our participants. But on the other side of it, if you look at the issues we work on, that in itself is safeguarding. So when we're talking about young people and their sexual health and rights, when we're talking about prevention of gender-based violence, that in itself is a safeguarding issue. So safeguarding the participants, the community members, whoever it is we're coming into contact with, whether it's vulnerable adults, whether it's disenfranchised young women and girls, safeguarding is about giving them the opportunity, providing the safe space, getting the education, providing the clinical services, the referral services, the counselling, whatever it is that our participants need. The element of safeguarding is making sure that there is a safe space for them to actually access that and then act on what they've learned. And Rebecca can certainly talk about safeguarding on the ground in terms of how we deliver that with our participants and how we make sure that our participants understand what is safeguarding. Because it's a great word for us in the development sector and we talk about it. but it means nothing if your participants don't know what safeguarding is. So Rebecca, maybe you can talk a little bit about how we deliver safeguarding to our participants.
It's very interesting to see what it is in theory and what it is on the ground. I think we do have very nice policies that we apply as much as possible. But the truth is that on the ground, we still face challenges because, as Yanni has said, you know, kids don't know that they have rights. Sometimes even adults don't know that those kids have rights. So by using the same methodology, we present the kids their rights. We do a session where we play football and then we add in the fact that something on the field can represent their rights. And the kids, by using the power of football, learn about their rights, about the fact that they can say no, about the fact that they need to empower other kids around them. And sometimes they find it funny because for them, being harassed or facing violence is a normal thing. And sometimes they find it funny for us to tell them, no, if someone hits you, that is not normal. So as soon as something happens on the field, they react. It's like, oh, this is violence, this is violence, this is violence. Because for them, you know, it's normal to face so much violence. But at the same time, you see that they understand and that they remember that, okay, actually, it is funny. Because we see it every day, but at the same time, okay, we do have rights, so we're going to talk about it. Even sometimes when talking to coaches, we hear very often, but you know, this is Africa, and we're trying to mention that it is Africa, but rights are universal.
I'm going to jump right in here, Rebecca, if that's okay with you, because I think here I'm hearing you both say safe space, safeguarding, and really this do no harm approach. And again, just tying into the comment you just made of like, ah, this is Africa. So how do you ensure in your work, in all the different contexts you operate in, that you're not bringing in your own ideas of what you understand under the different definitions, be it gender equality, be it human rights?
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. So everything that Tackle Africa does has to be done in collaboration with our participants, with our stakeholders on the ground. So whether that's with the local partners that we're working with, whether that be with the donor organizations or larger organizations that are bringing us in to do the work for them, we need to engage with all of those people and make sure that what we are doing and the way we're going to do it is built with them. And it's no different when we're talking about building GBV programming and prevention programming. We need to build that with the stakeholders who it matters to most. And so there are the two tracks of what is considered acceptable that we can set a red line to, and we can say, absolutely, that does not meet what anybody would agree is acceptable. And then there are the grey areas where it's not quite so clear. And so one of our core values at Tackle Africa is being respectful of individual choice. It's right there in our charter. You can see it's one of our three core values. The basis of that is we will have the discussions, we will build these programs to the best of our ability with our partners. There will be times where people don't agree with the approach. There will be times where people say, this is just the way things are done around here, and we don't agree with you. And, you know, corporal punishment is one where there is a lot of debate about, you know, whether you have the right to come in and say that that's not okay in context where it is considered to be acceptable. And those are the areas where we will set our red line, and we will say, we understand that you may not agree with us, and you then have the right to opt in or to opt out. Okay, that is the individual choice. That is for the people that are involved, for the organizations, you get to choose whether you're part of it. But there are certain things that for us, we will not bend on these. So we will not change our opinion. But it is hugely important that, you know, there are fine details that you need to really get into and you really need to understand. And that is all about being context aware. And so for us, it always comes back to the same thing. Work in consortia with the people who know this best and know it far better than we do, so that what we can do is bring a methodology and some skills and some capacity building, and then just work very specifically with the people that know how to deliver this on the ground in the best way.
We try and tell people that we're not there to tell them that our way is better or to change everything they're doing, just to put our strengths together, especially with the local partners who, as Yanni said, know how it is in the communities and try to make the best out of it.
Both your answers raise a twofold question in a way in my mind. One would be, how do you recruit your partners, or how do you build these partnerships? So how do you decide to work with partner X instead of partner Y in that context? And then maybe Rebecca, again, from maybe the context in Ivory Coast, how were you able, because at the end of the day, GBV is a very sensitive topic. So how do you come in, bridge that gap, and then attempt to eventually have the buy-in of people who would also be role models and advocates for this cause in their own communities? And like, what kind of pushback maybe have you faced?
I can start with the partner side of things. We invest as much time and capacity and effort as we can in finding the right partners. It's very often not that challenging. It's more challenging if you're opening up in a new country for whatever reason. So let's say you've secured some funding to work in a particular region. But then again, we never go in without doing the needs assessment, without doing the scoping. So we will be going in, we will be identifying the partners. You will find lots and lots of organizations whose goals match with yours. They are there to either work on the thematic topic, whether that's gender-based violence or something else to do with sexual health, or whether they have a broader remit and actually their remit is just to reach out to young people or to women and girls or whatever it might be. There's no problem from our point of view in finding great partners on the ground. We've never struggled to find partners who can really give us the local knowledge and the local context, because there are so many good ones. And we will work with a range. We don't work with any particular size or type. We work with really, really small CBOs, community-based organizations, and then we work with huge INGOs that sometimes we work across multiple countries, like our West Africa program is working across four different countries. It's just about putting in the time, really. That's the key thing. Committing to that, committing to the process of doing that scoping and the needs assessment and finding the right people to work with. And as long as you've done that, then you'll find those partners.
So maybe, Rebecca, how do you bridge the gap between your programming, the community, and what kind of pushback have you faced maybe in your context?
The methodology helps us a lot. So for sure, as we said, we have our way of thinking. On the ground is very different sometimes of what we have planned. But I think having good partners, as Yanni said, is key for the program to work, because they can give us inputs, they know how it works, they know how to approach the community. And then I think having local coaches also helps, because they are the ones on the ground and they help us a lot to understand how it works. Having those people from the community, the local partner, the coaches from the community, helps everybody get to the goals and makes the gap a bit smaller, because we put our strengths together, and I think that helps us achieve a good program. And again, football also helps a lot, because kids respond much better to football than just information.
Yeah, it's the global language. It's good that we have football. Thankful for that every day, I think. So I think we've talked a lot about, you know, who you are, how you structure your programming, what you do, all the work that goes into it. A good way to end for me would be, what do you understand under success? What does it mean to you of like, this program was successful?
I think that's a great question, Mariam. I think if we were specifically talking about GBV for us, success for Tackle Africa would be a just society where we've got equality of information, equality of access, and equality of opportunity to make positive decisions when it comes to taking control of your own life, your own sexual health, and doing that without the threat of violence based on your gender.
For me, as we work closely with kids, especially in Côte d'Ivoire and in West Africa, for me, it's seeing that they dare to get involved and they also dare to speak up. I think that's very important, and that for us is a big success when we see that there is that progression and evolution in how they think, how they talk, and the fact that they dare to reach out to other people.
There is no better way to end this episode. Thank you for your time and for helping us end this episode on a very positive note. To our listeners, you can learn more about Yanni, Rebecca, and Tackle Africa by referring to the portrait on our website. To stay up to date with our work, check out our Instagram account at SportXDevelopment. Thanks for tuning in, and see you next time.